The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the June-July issue of Scout Life. We're going to begin today on page 2, a few comments from Airy on the Prairie. Recently, I went to a city council meeting for a merit badge requirement. The main topic was about creating a local skate park. I thought this was interesting because there aren't any skate parks where I live, so it'd be good for the people who drive 1 hour to get to the next closest one. That's from Raylan R. in Danville, California. This is why merit badges are so cool. They get you involved in all kinds of things, like civics in this case. Now, I must admit my city council doesn't love me flying into their meetings. You'd think the council would say, wow, what a majestic bald eagle, the symbol of freedom. Welcome, you bird of grace and beauty. But instead, everyone starts yelling and chasing me out. Is it that I bring in snacks like worms, or is it that I fly around the rafters cawing the national anthem? We may never know the answer. I believe more about fishing should be added to the Scout Life website. Fishing is a very large subject, so it's not expected that the website cover everything. But I believe it should have a little more info. Many people who fish get their info on the internet, which isn't always 100% accurate. That's from William U. in Plantation, Florida.
You're wide beyond your years. We'll do better than more fishing content on the Scout Life site. How about an entire site dedicated to our fishing content? And you're right. A ton of anglers and, dare I say, birds get their fishing tips online. In fact, our articles about fishing are some of our most popular ones. Check it out. Fishing.scoutlife.org. Going fishing? Don't mind if I do. See you all later this summer. Gawk!
Juneteenth, Freedom Day, June 19th, celebrating 160 years. The federal holiday Juneteenth celebrates African-American freedom, achievements, and culture. It originated in Galveston, Texas on June 19, 1865, when Union General Gordon Granger informed 250,000 enslaved African-Americans in Texas that they were free. This came 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation, which President Abraham Lincoln issued on January 1, 1863. Visit headsup.scoutlife.org/celebrating-Juneteenth to learn more. Miles on the Salmon, 100 miles on the Salmon. Scouts found adventure, rafting and kayaking, scenic, Idaho River. After paddling for miles and navigating through rapids and around boulders, it feels nice to hop out of your inflatable raft for a bit and admire the scenery. For a troop, 260 of San Jose, California, the scouts could do that while relaxing in geothermal pools alongside the river. There was a bunch of hot springs throughout the trip, says Life Scout Matthew Lewis, age 16. There were different pools that were different temperatures. Some were hot, some were cold. They were definitely a highlight of the trip. That trip last July took the group 100 miles down Idaho's Salmon River, past towering jagged cliffs and cascading waterfalls. It took 3 years of planning, but the result was an adventure the scouts had never experienced before. Something different.
For years, Troop 260 alternated its high adventure plans. One year it's backpacking, the next canoeing, then back to backpacking, and then canoeing again. They wanted to try a new activity. We'd never been whitewater rafting, said Aiden Lavery, 17, a life scout. We voted, and Salmon won. When you're looking up the pictures, we saw the canyons. It was pretty amazing. The Salmon River cuts across central Idaho, running 425 miles through national forests and mountain ranges. It took 14 hours on the road traveling from California to Bradley Scout Reservation, where the group spent the first night and met their guides. They showed us all the equipment we'd use, said First Class Scout Pierce Rock, 15. They showed us dry bags as well as the life jackets and helmets. Rafting 101. The scouts planned for 20 miles a day on the river. Some of them would ride in one of the large inflatable rafts that would also carry their gear. Others would paddle one-person inflatable kayaks. We call the kayaks duckies, and the rafts were the mama ducks, says life scout Manasa Ramprasad, 17. The scouts would trade because a kayak gave a different experience than a raft. In a raft, you could relax more, while a kayak put you closer to the water. Even the smaller rapids, you felt them more, Pierce says. It felt more like you're in nature. When the group approached rapids, the protocol was always the same. We'd park the raft before the rapids, Mahanasa says. The guides would make sure it was safe to pass. I think all the scouts enjoyed the rapids, especially the higher class ones. Whitewater rapids are rated from the calm class 1 to the potentially deadly class 6. In scouting, older scouts who are classified swimmers can take all rapids up to class 4 with a professionally trained guide. The whitewater varied between class 2 and class 4 on the troop's route. Some days took the scouts over more rapids than others, but every day they found something fun to see or do. Crew camaraderie. Idaho is home to hundreds of hot springs. Most of them are heated by energy from underground fault lines. In addition to soaking in these pools near the river shores, adorned with ancient paintings, the scouts checked out ancient paintings, and they spotted wildlife, including bighorn sheep and river otters. They also went on day hikes, bathed under the waterfalls. There was this waterfall that changed direction based on how the wind was blowing, Mahanasa says. On the water, the scouts entertained themselves by telling riddles or hopping out of the raft to swim where it was safe. A huge part is spending time with your troop and your guides, Pierce says. High adventure trips are more than trying new activity. They're also times to build friendships and have fun. At the end of each day, the guides led the group in playing games and singing songs. They also prepared gourmet meals and served a Dutch oven cake after each dinner. It wasn't like our normal food, Matthew says. We're accustomed to hot dogs and cookies. River reflections. Even though they had traveled 100 miles in less than a week, the scouts weren't quite ready for their journey to end. It was a different feeling than what we feel at most 50-milers, Matthew says. On this one, it was fine to go home, but we weren't itching to get out of the water. While they had responsibilities throughout the trip, relying on confident guides helped relieve the stress of figuring out a new activity in unfamiliar country. Building self-reliance is a valuable exercise, and the scouts do that during their monthly campouts. But going on a high adventure trip where they could focus more on having fun made everything even more enjoyable. It was an awesome trip, Aiden says. I think a week of fun is awesome for a troop. And here are some captions. To go back to our first page of the article, page 12, or page 13, we'll look on the top of page 13, Scouts Found Adventure. Connor Lavery, Pierce Rock, and Mahasa Ramprasad, along with their guide, eagerly looked downriver. Below, Benda Hart and Joshua Aquila are all smiles after paddling through rapids. Then over on page 14 at the top, Joshua, the troop prepared to launch at the middle fork of the Salmon River. Joshua Kia, Ben DeHart, and Jaden Patel pose as they enjoy the view. On the bottom of page 14, Aiden Lavery checks out a tub that was built to capture a hot spring. And to the right on page 14, Aiden Lavery, Mahanasa Ramprasad, and Pierce Rock prepare dinner. On the trip were vegetarians, so the scouts made meals that accommodated everyone. Moving on to the top of page 15, DeHart and Joshua, this is top left, DeHart and Joshua Kia navigate through rapids. Bottom of page 15, the troop stopped for lunch by Shoshone Falls in Twin Falls, Idaho, on its way to Bradley Scout Reservation. The falls are nicknamed the Niagara of the West. Next, we have Fish Against the Tide. Angling in the ocean? Prepare for a challenge. Surf fishing can be much more challenging than dropping a line from the shore of a peaceful lake or river. You're standing in the water as foamy waves crash around you. You might get a bite and then get nothing. And you wait and wait and wait, but you just can't stand there. You have to keep moving because the waves keep pushing you back, says Emma Swadal, 17, a Star Scout. You have to battle with the waves and the current. And every time you lose your bait, you have to walk all the way back to the beach. Overcoming these obstacles and still reeling in fish can be a lot of fun. Troop 4443 of Austin, Texas, found this out during its weekend campout on the Texas coast. The girls caught a few fish, played in the water, and capped it all off with a delicious fish fry. To the coast. During summer camp a couple of years ago, many of the troop scouts enjoyed taking the fish merit badge and wanted to plan their own fishing trip. So last year, they settled on Mustang Island State Park, a place with 5 miles of beachfront. One of the adult leaders had some of the fishing equipment they would need, and the troop borrowed the rest. For surf fishing, you need sturdier stuff, like heavy-duty line, bigger weights, and stronger rods. Your tackle needs to handle not only pulling in a large fish, but also enduring the rough waves and currents. The girls were hoping to land spotted sea trout or red drum, but in case they didn't, they packed hot dogs and hamburgers. Before they baited their hooks, like the scouts who were classified as swimmers, reviewed the safety rules and picked buddies. Then they set up a fishing area from swimmers. In the surf, the scouts used shrimp and cut bait, pieces of fish or other seafood. These natural baits work well because their odors attract fish. With their hooks baited, they ventured into the water. Most of us were doing it for fun, says Tenderfoot Scout Addie Heitman, age 13. A few of us were working on the merit badge. I think a lot of younger scouts just wanted to play in the water. While maneuvering through the waves was a chore, the biggest challenge was staying focused. You reel in a lot of lines and nothing happens, Emma says. And it's hard to tell, but when the top of the rod bends down and it doesn't pop up as quickly as hard, there's weight on it. That's when you might have a fish. However, during their 6+ hours of surf fishing, nobody reeled in a sea trout or red drum. But most everyone was able to snag at least one fish, mainly catfish or gulf whiting, on the plate. Many of the fish they caught weren't very meaty. Still, they didn't have to abandon their seafood supper. One of the adults had brought red drum and red snapper and mahi-mahi. The adults grilled and fried the fish while the scouts prepared the side dishes, including fries, salad, coleslaw, and rice. It was so good, says Scout Evie Heitman, age 11. The fishing trip ranked high for the girls. They tried a favorite activity in a new way and enjoyed it, with most of the troop making the 4-hour journey to the coast. "I really enjoyed this camp out," Addie says. "It was very scouty." Stay safe. Before any aquatic activity, review Scouting America's safety guides, including Safe Swim Defense. In the ocean, there are added dangers, including jellyfish, stings, and rip currents. If you're stung by a jellyfish, you can remove the tentacles and rinse the sting with vinegar. If any swelling worsens or you have an allergic reaction, seek medical help. If you're swept out to sea by a rip current, stay calm and swim across the current instead of against it. When you reach calmer waters, you can return to shore. Being prepared helps you to have a safe and enjoyable trip. Now let's read some of the captions in this from this article. Here we have on page 18 at the bottom here, Annabelle Vickery on the left checks out a croaker that Claire Vest reeled in and later released. Above, the scouts enjoy the waves. And here on bottom right, far right, Emma Sridal shows off 2 catfish that she caught. Good job, Emma. Here at the top of page 19, not every meal involves seafood. Sridal and Addie Heitman make French toast for breakfast. Bottom of page 19, Josephine Riza gets some help removing a fish from her line. Fish hooks are sharp, so be careful and review your first aid skills in case you or someone else gets one stuck in their skin. And then here at the bottom of 19, Emma Stone and Emma Schreidel hold up a fish that they caught. Next article, Stolen Treasure. Just how far will Chris go to help his family? Chris waits while his mom fumbles for the key. The house is ginormous, with big white columns in front, a separate garage, and a swimming pool. Compared to the cramped apartment he shares with his mom, this is a palace. "Finally," says his mom, inserting the key and punching in the code to disarm the alarm. "I'll start in the kitchen. You can go upstairs." "Sure." Chris mounts the staircase with a big plastic bag to collect the garbage. Ever since the landlord raised their rent, his mom has had to work on Saturdays to make ends meet. It's just been the two of them since his dad died years ago. He hates that she has to work so hard, so he insists on helping her out. Chris goes into the room where the owner's son sleeps. It's huge, with a giant flat-screen TV on the wall. There are also 2 laptops, a gaming console, and a skateboard. Chris feels a stab of envy, and when he empties the trash can, he finds a loose handful of change, 2 quarters, a dime, and a whole bunch of pennies. He hesitates before pocketing the money, but he decides it's okay because it's being thrown away. Next, he goes into the master bedroom. As Chris empties the waste basket, he accidentally tips it over. He bends to right it, and that's when he spies something sparkling. He picks it up. It's a sparkling pin. Diamonds, he guesses. It's also a bit dusty, which means it's probably been there for a while. Did anyone even miss it? His heart starts to pound. Who would know if he took it? No, that would be stealing, and stealing is wrong. But this family is so rich. The son throws away coins, and the mom drops diamonds behind dressers, while his mom is working 2 jobs, and they're eating ramen noodles for dinner too many nights. "Chris," called his mom, "how's it going?" Great. He quickly slips the pin into his pocket. Then he scours the master bathroom, strips the sheets, and vacuums the hole upstairs. It's as if the diamond pin has some magical power to energize him. "You're a cleaning superhero," said his mom. They finish ahead of schedule and stop for a pizza on the way home. Only Chris has no appetite and can barely choke down a slice. "Are you okay?" asked his mom. "I'm fine," says Chris. He forces himself to eat another bite, although the pizza tastes like cardboard. That night, Chris searches online for a local pawn shop. He tells himself he's not really going to sell the pin. He just wants to know what it's worth. On Monday, he has his band practice after school, and the day after that, baseball practice. So it's not until Wednesday that he's able to take the long two-bus ride to the pawn shop. His mom's at work, and he usually goes right home, calling her when he gets there. But today, he told her he was going to his friend Gabe's, a big, fat lie. The pawn shop is in a sketchy neighborhood, and the guy behind the counter is scary, shaved head, black beard, and a pierced eyebrow.
"Where'd you get this?"
he asked suspiciously.
"I found it," says Chris.
"Where?"
"In the park," Chris says.
What a lame answer.
"Well, without a receipt or proof of where you got it, I can't sell it."
"Oh," Chris feels his cheeks flame. He leaves the shop in a hurry. That night, Chris can barely sleep. Taking that pin was a stupid thing to do. Maybe the stupidest thing he's ever done. But that scary dude at the pawn shop did him a favor. Tomorrow is Friday, and then it's Saturday, the day his mom goes to clean the big house. He'll go to and put the pin back. No one will ever know. Only when Saturday comes, he wakes up with a sore throat and a fever. "You stay in bed and sleep," says his mom. "I'll check in later." Chris doesn't have the energy to protest. He drinks the cup of tea she's made and closes his eyes. Next week, he thinks, as he drifts off, next week for sure. He's woken by a sound he can't quite identify. Chris shuffles into the other room to find his mom sitting at the table crying. "What's wrong?" he asks, though in his heart he knows. "Mrs. Blake says I stole her diamond pin," she says. "She can't prove it, so she's calling the police. But she fired me." Chris is so guilty and ashamed that he can't even speak, much less tell his mom what he did. On Monday, he's well enough to go to school. He's calm now because he knows what to do. When the bell rings at 3 o'clock, he doesn't go to the band practice. Instead, he takes the school bus to the last stop and then walks the rest of the way to the big house with the columns. "Can I help you?" The woman who answers the door must be Mrs. Blake. She's wearing a pair of diamond earrings, but she doesn't look snooty or mean. She looks really nice. Chris's mouth goes dry, and he practically has to cough the words out. "My mom didn't steal your pin. I did." And then he takes the hateful thing out of his pocket and thrusts it at her. "So if you want to call the police, go ahead. Only blame me, not her. And please, please don't fire her." Is he crying? Angrily, he swiped at his eyes. "You took the pin?" Mrs. Blake looked surprised. "I did, and I'm sorrier than I've ever been in my whole life." And then he breaks down, sobbing. Why don't you come inside?" Mrs. Blake says gently. "You can tell me all about it." Seated in her fancy kitchen, eating the brownies and milk she'd offered him, he tells her about the crummy apartment, the rent hike, and his mom's struggle just to keep them going. Mrs. Blake listens intently. She doesn't look angry or like she's about to call the police. Finally, Chris is quiet. He finishes the second brownie. It's like the best he's eaten ever, and drinks the last of his milk. "It took courage for you to come here today," says Mrs. Blake. "A lot of courage. And I didn't realize your situation was so difficult. Your mother never said so." "She doesn't like to ask for help," Chris says. "Well, I'm glad you did, because I felt sorry about firing her. She's a hard worker and always leaves the house spotless. And it just so happens I've been looking for a live-in housekeeper, and your mother might just be the person. We've got an apartment over the garage that's quite spacious. You could have it rent-free. That would make things easier, wouldn't it?"
"Would it ever?" he smiles broadly.
"I thought so." Mrs. Blake stands up. "Now, how about I drive you home and we can tell your mother together?" How to conduct a flag ceremony. From Handbook Help, Scouting Around. The flag of the United States of America symbolizes our country, our shared ideals, and our fellow citizens. It should be treated with dignity and respect. So how exactly do you do that? You follow the flag etiquette. Below are guidelines for respecting and caring for this American symbol. Some of these guidelines include knowing how to display the flag properly. That's important when conducting a flag ceremony at a campout, a unit meeting, or a community event. Your unit can perform one. Here's an outline for a simple ceremony. One, two scouts stand at the back of the room, each holding a flag. The scout with the American flag stands to the right. The leader stands behind them or at the front of the room. Number two, the leader says, "Color guard, attention, and audience, please rise." Scout salute. The scouts raise their flag so the poles are at a 45-degree angle and the ends are near their belt buckles. Don't let the American flag touch the ground or anything beneath the flag. Number three, the leader says, "Color guard, post the colors." The scouts with the flags walk to the front of the room. When they get near the front, the scout with the American flag crosses in front of the other scout. They place the flags in their stands, then step back and salute. The American flag should be on the right or to the audience's left. The leader says, "Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance." And the leader leads the pledge. The leader says, "Two," and everyone stops saluting. The leader says, "Color guard, reform and return to ranks." The flag carriers line up at the front of the room and walk back to their starting position. Number six, the leader says, "Color guard, at ease, and please be seated." The program for the event continues as planned. How about a little thinking green to end with? Why wasn't the man hurt when the soda hit him? Josiah, I don't know why. Gabe, because it was a soft drink. Gwen, what do you call a cow with two legs? Braxton, I'm clueless. Gwen, lean beef. That's from Gwen M. in Blaine, Minnesota. Alan, someone's pretending to be an owl. Scoutmaster, who? Alan, you. That's from Alan C. in Camp Hill, Pennsylvania. We've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Please tune in next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivy, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.